When was the last time you had a really good day? You know, when everything just kind of seemed to come together, when all of the ducks lined up in a row and all the things kind of unfolded in the way that they were meant to be. You know, perhaps it was just a good day, not necessarily a really good day, but just those moments when you just realize, hey, it's good to be alive. It's good to experience all that's kind of happening and unfolding around me. Maybe on that day, you know, we were able to love more than to receive that love. Maybe we were able to provide a shoulder for someone to cry on. Maybe we were able to spend that time in prayer when we were a little bit more focused on listening to God's word, God's life, God's love for us. It, in fact, seems to be one of the biblical principles that when God looks at us, he looks at us through the filter of our very best day, the very best time in our life when we were able to be more focused on God, on his goodness. He doesn't look necessarily at all our failures, all of the ways that we get things wrong, that we stuff things up. But he seems to regard us just with that best of intentions, because it seems to be the way that he created us to be. You know, he bestowed that possibility. And when we lean into that, when we move into that possibility of devoting ourselves to life and to goodness, that's where God realizes that we've come alive, that we're finally experiencing what he originally intended, what he created us to be. And yet, we still focus on the negative. We focus on our mistakes. And we see that in the three characters that we encounter in our readings today. You know, in the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah is just minding his own business there in the temple in Jerusalem. And so he seems to be completely overwhelmed when suddenly this rapturous vision kind of unfolds around him. And he sees the very throne room of heaven and all of the seraphim, all of the angels kind of gathered in worship around the throne, being brought into the very most holy place. And so, of course, he gathers and joins with the angels in their cry that we sing at every Mass. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord, the God of hosts. Because he's filled with just this wonder and delight. But then realizing that being brought into the very presence of God, that's a dangerous place to be, because he believes that no one can come into the very presence of God. No one can see God face to face and live. And so all he's aware of is his sinfulness, and that this there's something completely wrong with all of this. And yet one of the seraphs comes and brings one of the coals from the incense and allows that to touch his lips so that he's able to be burned, but able to be purified through that experience, through that encounter. And Isaiah, you know, offers that final prayer, that final declaration. He knows that he's unworthy. He knows that he's unclean. And yet he offers himself. And yet he makes that declaration. Well, here I am. Send me. It's a great prayer for us to pray. You know, Paul, when he realized that on the road to Damascus, when he's on the way to persecute more followers of the way, when he's already thrown many into prison, perhaps he's already contributed to the death of some of those who were followers. We know he was present when St. Stephen was martyred. Perhaps he even took part in some of those stonings, some of those events. It's certainly fitting within his character as this very zealous Pharisee. And yet on that day, he encounters the living God. On that day, he realizes that the Jesus that he's been trying to stamp out, the Jesus and the followers that he's been trying to suppress, suddenly is there before him, and he realizes that he's addressing the very Lord himself. So when he's relating here in 1 Corinthians 15, all of the wonders of what happened after the time of the resurrection of Jesus, all the different people that Jesus appeared to, and then to say, and then he even came to see me. He even came to reveal himself before me. You know, someone who wasn't just on the margins, wasn't just negative towards Christianity, but such a violent oppressive voice against the believers. And yet Jesus even appeared to him. We don't know much about Simon and his two companions in the other boat, James and John. We haven't experienced anything really about them yet. So we haven't seen any of the good things that they might be capable of. And yet Jesus invites them. Jesus invites them into that experience and that life. It seems that they're not even really paying attention to Jesus as he's teaching on the shore, because we're told that they're busy kind of mending their nets, washing the nets, fixing the boats, just doing all of the work, all of the labor that is required. I imagine that they're pretty glum, pretty gloomy, after having been out all night on the lake, being tossed about by the wind and the waves, trying to catch enough fish to provide for their families, and yet they've caught nothing. And so they're washing the nets, just going, ugh, another day when we haven't even been able to bring back one this big, let alone one this big, that we're able to offer to our families and to pay the taxes and to do all the things that are necessary. And so it probably comes as some surprise when Jesus invites Simon first, just to, can I sit in your boat? Can I push it out a little bit from the shore so that the crowd that's pressing in, I'm able to address them and we're not having to get my feet wet in the midst of all of this. And then at the end of his teaching, Jesus says, how about you push it out just a little bit further, out into the deep water? Of course, that was the message that Pope John Paul II invited us to 25 years ago, as we began the new millennium. He wrote that wonderful encyclical letter, Ducem Aurum, to go out into the deep, inviting us as a whole church to push out into the deep waters, you know, to stop standing in the shallows, to stop being content just to get our feet wet. He's inviting us to go out deeper into that experience and that encounter. Simon isn't convinced. Lord, you know, it's only in the night when you're able to catch the fish. In the middle of the day, there's never any fish around, but if you say so, I will do it. And it's that attitude that we need to really adopt as followers of Jesus, that attitude of saying, well, I think you're wrong. I think that you're full of whatever, but I will accept this invitation and I will put out, I'll first move the boat into the deep water and then I'll put out the nets for a catch. And of course, he's then overwhelmed when the fish begin to swarm into the net, and there's so many that even they're calling the companions in the other boat, bringing them out, gathering their nets, that both boats are so full of fish that they're in fear of drowning, fear of sinking. The invitation for us, no matter where we are, no matter what we've experienced in our lives, that God is always inviting us back into that great day, back into that day when we're able to open ourselves to love and forgiveness and life and mercy, when we're able to embrace the fullness of who we've been called to be. Though it's not about what we've done right that Jesus sees in us, but it's in about our openness, our capacity, our willingness to put out into the deep, our willingness to open ourselves to all that God has created, that potential within us, and to respond in that moment, to respond in that grace. So let's indeed be people that allow God to invite us into that freedom. In responding, it will come at a cost. Isaiah's lips were burned by that experience. Peter, or Simon, and James and John gave away their business. They gave away the fishing game in order to be followers of Jesus. Discipleship always comes at a cost. There's always some sting involved. And yet, we find this freedom. In giving ourselves and surrendering ourselves, we discover this very gift of God inviting us more fully and more completely into life. So it's indeed, allow the words of Isaiah, the final prayer of Isaiah, to resonate with us today. There's not much I can offer, Lord. I'm full of all kinds of compromises and all sorts of stuff that I'm not happy about. And yet, wherever I am, whatever I have, here I am. Send me.